Sanchez here. This is Direct Impact, and this is some of what we're going to be talking about.
People inside Ukraine and people outside Ukraine started asking questions about whether this was a good deal, and it was at that point that it fell apart.
This is a blockbuster admission that you are about to hear. That is Victoria Nuland, none other than Victoria Nuland, admitting for the very first time that she and others in the U.S. government killed the peace deal between Russia and Ukraine. And she goes on to explain why they did it. I'm Rick Sanchez. What do you say we do this? Look, one way or another, truth always, my dad told me this. My mom told me this. I tell my kids this. One way or another, it could take a decade, it took like months, years, what, the truth always comes out. It just does. And here it is, Victoria Nuland telling the truth. She has just made a blockbuster confession. Nuland was the Undersecretary of State in charge of all things Ukraine and that part of Europe. She's earned a reputation as among the most pro-war, hawkish neocons in the entire U.S. government, right? And she has now admitted that, yes, it is true. She is saying it is true. About a year and a half ago and about 100,000 dead Ukrainians ago, she and others killed a peace deal that would have ended the war in Ukraine. Would have ended the war in Ukraine. I mean, wow, right? I'm still thinking about this myself, and I'm impressed with its import. We have reported here on several occasions about the facts that we knew that Russia and the Ukrainian diplomats had reached a deal, but then former UK Minister Boris Johnson showed up and told the Ukrainians, nope, turn it down. Say no, we don't want it. Yet, tell the Russians to go away, close the door, it's over. Of course, Johnson and other Western sources have denied that reporting, denied that they did that. But now Victoria Nuland is actually, I'm surprised she's doing this, by the way. She's coming out and confirming, yeah, it's true. She even explains why.
The Ukrainians began asking for advice on where this thing was going. And it became clear to us, clear to the Brits, clear to others, that Putin's main condition was buried in an annex to this document that they were working on. Mm-hmm. And it included limits on the precise kinds of weapons systems that Ukraine could have after the deal. And there were no similar constraints on Russia. Russia wasn't required to pull back. Russia wasn't required to have a buffer zone from the Ukrainian border, wasn't required to have the same constraints on its military facing Ukraine. And so people inside Ukraine and people outside Ukraine started asking questions about whether this was a good deal.
People outside Ukraine. Two things. So, okay, there was a sticking point in the negotiations. Why not negotiate the sticking point? That's what everybody else in this world does. You know, we're not quite there yet. Let's keep talking. No. Walk away. Kill the deal. Let people continue fighting. Let hundreds of thousands of soldiers on the Ukraine side die. Second point. Nuland seems most troubled by the fact that the deal would limit the weapons that we can send to Ukraine. You notice she kept talking about the weapons, which fits exactly with Nuland's persona as the de facto lobbyist for the American military-industrial complex vis-a-vis Ukraine war sales. But wait, there's even more to this story today. Here's a second confirmation that there was a deal. It comes from one of the Ukrainian diplomats who was sitting right there at the table negotiating with the Russians, right? He was so happy that he and his Ruski friends had finally come up with a deal that they popped a bottle of champagne.
You came back with the negotiating party.
Yes, completely. Yes, it was successful. We opened the champagne bottle, you know, for this because
you
it
actually
was,
opened a bottle of champagne in this.
Yes, time. Because it was completely successful negotiations.
Think about this. Think about what I'm reporting. A year and a half ago, the war in Ukraine would have been over. Damn, man. Andrei Telechenko is joining us now. He's a whistleblower, an ex-Ukrainian diplomat. He's filling in for Manila today. I don't even know what to say. You're closer to this than I am, so I'll just let you talk.
Mr. Sanchez, thank you for being back on the show. Always a great honor. I know Vicky Newland, unfortunately. I can tell you that. I knew her from 2014. I met with her one-on-one talking about the coup in Ukraine that was happening outside the walls of the hotel in Kyiv where she was staying. And I can tell you, she's a political monster. She doesn't respect anybody except herself and except the deep state she works for. That is the problem. She's not a diplomat. She just goes for total destruction, and she destroyed Ukraine. Destroyed Ukraine in 14, and she destroyed Ukraine in 2022. And even before that, not getting the Minsk Accords on track and getting Ukraine working on them, because there were she was also behind Ukraine pushing and not acknowledging those Minsk Accords, which Ukraine signed. So this is her role in this. She's responsible for the deaths of more than 970,000 Ukrainian soldiers up to today. She's responsible for all those deaths. And she's responsible for the war in Donbass in 14.
I mean, hold on. Let's just stay with this issue. Can you think of, maybe I misunderstand this, maybe I'm not giving her enough credit, maybe she's right, maybe I'm not looking at it correctly. I'm always thinking if there's a way to stop a war, you stop a war. But her explanation to him I found interesting, because she's being very picayune. She's talking about, well, there was this thing in the deal where when we read it, paragraph 5, Ukraine wouldn't be allowed to have so many weapons, but the Russians could. I mean, that sounds smallish to me. Am I wrong? Am I not right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is, because in 2014, Ukraine had, its army was a total disaster, and the U.S. had no problem with that at all, and the U.S. was responsible for basically then packing up the Ukrainian army with the old weapons from the military-industrial complex and sending them out to Ukraine and then renewing them with new ones in the U.S. Backyard. So this is what she was doing. She's also looking into, as you said, weapons. The thing with the weapons part, Ukraine would have a smaller army. When Ukraine gave away
so
its
what?
Nuclear power.
So what? If the war ends, I mean, oh my God.
Think about what we're talking about.
That Ukraine might have a smaller army than Russia. We can't allow that to happen. So let these people continue to kill each other. That sounds crazy to me. I mean, I don't mean to sound mean. Maybe there's something she knows I don't know. But man, if what she's saying, if we just take her at her word, it sounds like she's saying we just wanted to continue more arms sales. That's what I'm hearing.
Yes, it is. That's what it is, and that's what it's all about today. They couldn't topple the government in Russia. So now what they're doing is just making money on the military-industrial complex and Ukrainian land. That's what it's all about. That's what this war is all about. That's what she's all about. She's the representative of the deep state fighting the war with Russia. She hates Russia from her body in within.
Yeah,
she used to serve on a Russian boat in the 90s. And from that day on, she just hates Russians. I don't know what happened on that boat, but from that day on, she doesn't think properly. As a diplomat and as a government official, that's a total disaster. And that's a terrible disaster for the U.S. diplomacy, because U.S. diplomacy led to the war happening in Ukraine. They're responsible for this proxy war between Russia and not Ukraine, but between Russia and the United States. This is what it's all about.
I'm not, you know, blaspheming her or being overly critical when I say what everybody knows who studies U.S. politics. She is a neocon. She is a war hawk. She comes from that background. She's made her money in that background. And her husband is just as bad, if not worse, than she is. And his name is Robert Kagan. And by the way, he has every right to be that way. Some people can be war hawks. Some people can be peaceniks, either way. But it would be fair to classify both of them as that. I've got another story I want to bring to you, and then I want to probably talk about it on the back end as we go to the break. Because speaking of the military-industrial complex, which you and I have been talking about, what do you say we talk a little bit now about the Iraq War? Why? Nobody in the United States ever talks about the Iraq War like it never even happened, though it did. And because when we think of the Iraq War, there's one name that comes to mind. It's not Victoria Nuland, although it could be. And it could also be your husband, Robert Kagan. But the real big name when you talk about the Iraq War is Cheney. Cheney. He is the absolute embodiment of that war. He's also the embodiment of what President Eisenhower warned against, right? Letting people who make their money from war into our government. Eisenhower said, don't do that, America. Well, when it comes to that, it doesn't get any better than Dick Cheney. He was president of Halliburton, which makes almost billions off of wars. Then he became the president of the United States, wink, vice president of the United States, who then pushed through a completely disastrous and unnecessary war in Iraq. And his company made billions of dollars off of it. It is easily one of the worst military blunders in U.S. history. Yet this weekend, he and his daughter endorsed Vice President Kamala Harris. Good for them, they have a right to. It was celebrated by Democrats and by the media as if Jesus Christ himself had come down to earth and endorsed Ms. Harris.
Dick Cheney will be voting for Kamala Harris.
That's Liz Cheney confirming that both Cheneys will be voting for Kamala Harris. And then on CNN, the talking heads, they come on to talk about this. They talk about this guy like he's one of the greatest men in the history of mankind.
Listen, I'm not surprised. Liz Cheney's someone who put her career on the line to do what was right. She has been a vocal critic of the former president since January 6th, and she's endorsed Democrats before.
Cheney and Kamala Harris effectively on the same side is a better understanding of the risk to American democracy and national security. I mean, we have Trump's own former chief of staff, former defense secretary, former generals all talking about how he is a risk to national security, and now to have Dick Cheney come and remind us of that is, I think, very compelling.
Can you believe this? I mean, are we living in an upside-down world or something? Look, I'm not criticizing them for saying this is important for Harris and the Democrats to get a prominent Republican to be on their side. They're right. That is true. Whenever either party does that, just like it was when Robert Kennedy and Tulsi Gabbard did the same thing for Trump. But where's the context, man? I mean, did they forget the Iraq War even happened? Are they maybe too young to remember it? I mean, do they not know there was a civil war too? And then to call him Cheney, the guy who makes us safer? Really? The Iraq War created possibly more terrorism organizations than any other battle in the history of the United States on Earth. Completely screwed up whatever chance for democracy there will ever be in the Middle East. That made us safer? I mean, I listen to these people sometimes. I feel sorry for Americans who end up getting their news from CNN. I really do. I mean, are these people who I'm hearing talking here about these things with Cheney, are they bought off? Or are they just stupid? Let's talk about this after the break when we come back. I mean, this one gets really my blood boiling because, look, I don't mind doing the story, but put it in context. The way they've presented this almost seems to me outlandish. Andre's going to join us on the other side of the break. Stay right there. We'll be right back. Andrei Telechenko is an ex-Ukrainian diplomat. He's a whistleblower. He's one of those guys who tends to be a truth teller. That doesn't mean everything he says is right, but tends to be on the right path, at least, and tends to be transparent and honest about it, or at least we try as best we can. You know, this thing with Cheney really floored me over the weekend. I watched the coverage of this, and I was just flabbergasted by the hero worshiping and the fact that most Americans, and I feel bad for my fellow Americans, who are constantly being buffaloed by the media, by the fact that they never mention Iraq, they never tell us what happened in Iraq, and then they have as guests on their shows, week in and week out, the people who planned and executed perhaps one of the worst battles and wars in the history of our country, and they bring them on as experts on war and foreign affairs. That's like having a coach with a 1-15 record in the NFL inviting him on as a great coach. He's a coach, but he ain't a great coach, Andre.
Unfortunately, the gloves are off, and or maybe it's good. We see how all these people from the deep state are showing their face today, and how they're being praised by the big media, which they own. They own them. They finance them, they own them, and the public can see it today. But unfortunately, at the same time, it's propaganda that has blocked what people can see, what's true and what's not true. They're forgetting when it's needed about Iraq, Afghanistan, they're forgetting, and then remembering about the Russia hoax story, which was destroyed by everybody who can, destroyed by all the experts, and they're remembering that. So this is what we're facing today. This is what the West is facing today. Can you imagine what they're doing? If they're doing this to America, what they're doing to us in Ukraine, how they're treating us and around the globe. So this is what we have to deal with.
What do you
today,
mean? What do you mean? You were a Ukrainian diplomat, and I have been reading a lot lately about the pressure that Ukraine got, its politicians, its government, from the United States and from the Brits, et cetera, et cetera. Well, hell, we just talked about it. They made you walk away from what would have been a peace deal that would have saved hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian soldiers from dying, and Russian soldiers, by the way. Tell us about that pressure. What do you mean by that?
They own everybody, in Ukraine especially. They, a lot of Ukrainians and politicians especially sold off to America. A lot of them have kids living in America. They have citizenship. A lot of them have just money problems, which the American government helped them solve. So they own Ukrainian government officials. I didn't want to be part of that, so I said no. They offered me even citizenship. I said no. I'm a citizen of Ukraine. I have my own passport, and that's it. I'm going to fight for that country. And that's what they were pissed about.
So is that what they hold over the head? Like, okay, let's suppose the United States of America wants something out of country X. They go to country X. The first thing they do is they get to know the politicians, and they come to the politicians, and they say, hey, let's have a meeting. They have a meeting with them, and then do they actually give them, I mean, I'm asking, is it cash? You say it's American citizenship. Why is American citizenship so valuable to these guys?
It's long-term relationship. It's not. It doesn't happen in a day. It happens in a couple of years term. There are people working on the ground. It's a whole process. And they come up forward and see which politicians are more loyal to the Western side, which politicians are more stupid, sorry for my language, and can be more controllable, will not ask less questions, if they're going to be given orders, direct orders to destroy their own country, and then they go and embrace them. And depends on which politician has more money. He's a businessman. They offer him financial protection, like Poroshenko, Zelensky. Other politicians who have less money, they offer them citizenship, which a lot of Ukrainians were also under propaganda. Politicians were ready to sell off. It's for that citizenship just to live abroad because of all that pro-Soviet era, Cold War era propaganda that Soviet Union is closed, the West was closed, and now they can travel back and forth. They're people of America, but they're not treated this way. They were treated always as a third world country, and they were used always by these so-called Dick Cheneys and Newlands.
Yeah, so I get it, and I understand what you're saying, and it makes sense that the United States...
If you don't obey an order, they come to you and they say, we will destroy you. That's what they did to me. They told me that they will go after me. Two members of the U.S. Embassy, which one of them was the deputy head of an embassy in Europe. I won't mention his name online, but they told me, if you will not take a deal with us and you will still continue to go against us, we will politically destroy you. That's what they did.
But what?
And starting from 2017, they went after me and they sanctioned me twice, once in my country, the other one
because
in the
you didn't
United
play
States,
your so because you didn't play their game. Because you didn't play their game.
Yeah, so they called me a Russian agent.
So let me ask you about that. You mentioned the United States goes in and they try to influence the politicians. They want to get them to pick up the phone and do their bidding, et cetera. Doesn't Russia do the same thing? Didn't Russia, for example, probably go into Ukraine and also try to influence some of these politicians? Wouldn't China and any other country do something like that? What's the difference?
They didn't pressure them or didn't act as radically as the U.S. did. Didn't act as aggressively. Russia was there, but it didn't act aggressively. China was there. They didn't act aggressively. They just come and offered bids on projects and money, making money on the side, but didn't act aggressively. They didn't threaten you to destroy your life if you do not work with them. That is the biggest difference between Russia, China, or any other country you're working with. Of course, if you sell your soul, then you can be destroyed if you don't obey the orders. But here, Ukrainians were lining up. The Ukrainian government was lining up.
Did a U.S. official or someone working on behalf of the State Department actually say to you, we need to get rid of Poroshenko, and this is what we want you to do to get rid of him so we can get somebody like Zelensky in there who's more favorable to our positions? Did you ever hear that kind of language?
Not about Poroshenko, but about a lot of other people. Yes, I did. I had conversations with the advisors of the President of the United States about that kind of issues, talking about getting rid of a prime minister or prosecutor general, which was not loyal to the U.S. government. I had talks about that with U.S. ambassadors and members of the State Department. So, yeah, and not only me, but everybody else in the Ukraine government who has a connection and does interact with the West, so-called West, they do have those talks. I had those talks, a lot of them, and which I reported back to Ukraine. And unfortunately, those talks, even I didn't support them, they still went on their way because other people obeyed them.
Interesting.
Because they were afraid to go my way. That is the biggest problem. They are afraid, a lot of people are afraid to not to obey because they understand they will have their lives destroyed like me, and they will not have a chance to go anywhere else in the world.
Yeah,
so
no,
that's the biggest problem here.
That's a lot of pressure. Finally, this, Russian President Vladimir Putin was recently asked, you're going to like this, Andre, this is an interesting story. He was asked recently who he liked in the U.S. election between Mr. Trump and Mr. Harris. Now, here's Putin being asked, who do you like? You like Harris or you like Trump, right? And I think you might be a little bit surprised by his response. Let's take a listen.
Это все-таки выбор американского народа. И, ну, я уже говорил, у нас, значит, фаворитом, если можно сказать, был действующий президент, господин Байден. Вот он, его сняли с гонки, но он рекомендовал всем своим, значит, сторонникам поддержать госпожу Харрис. Ну, вот и мы тоже так сделаем, будем ее поддерживать. Это, во-первых, во-вторых, она так выразительно и заразительно смеется, что это говорит о том, что у нее все хорошо.
So he gets applause when he says he supports Kamala Harris, and then he even says he likes her. He likes the way she smiles. He likes her laugh. I guarantee you one thing. That will never be played or seen by news consumers who get their information here in Western media and places like CNN, et cetera, right? They're never going to see that. They'll see it here, but they won't see it there. Had he criticized Ms. Harris, had he announced that he was going to be voting for Trump and not for her, or said something good about Trump, I guarantee you it would have been on a constant loop all day long, running on NBC, the BBC, CNN. How am I wrong? Tell me, Andre.
This is a troll. This has been a trolling of like 100 levels from President Putin on U.S. politics, because this topic of Russian collusion from happening for years and years, and this has just been everybody's talking about this. As you said, if it was Trump, it would be this conflict of interest topics. Intelligence.
He didn't say what they wanted to hear. If he would have said, no, I hate Kamala Harris, it would have been huge, front page New York Times. But he said, I like her. She looks pretty. She's got a nice smile. I like. She's laughed. She is agreeable. They're like, oh no, did Trump just say that? That humanizes him. We can't let this guy be human, right? I mean, that's what I'm thinking.
It was sarcasm. So much sarcasm in this politics, which the U.S. don't understand anymore. The big media don't understand how it even works. That bit is going to go into history and how you have to work with the U.S. and how you have to put everybody in place and work on your own level.
But wouldn't you take him at his word? I mean, this guy's a Machiavellian dude, like all politicians are, by the way. And I'm sure he says, you know what? I've looked at her. She is good looking. She's got a nice smile. She's got a nice demeanor. Why not say that? It's probably true. It's true.
If you're going to listen to him in Russian, which is, I speak native Russian also, you understand it's sarcasm on the highest level of you can imagine.
Okay.
It's politics. So basically, Trump has been attacked, being connected to Russia. Why not having Kamala? Like we said, we're going to vote for Biden. Let's vote for Kamala. We're supporters of Biden, so we're going to go ahead and support Kamala Harris. That's what's not the case here. Russia's behind Kamala Harris. She's less damaging for the U.S. than Trump. He was talking about that. Less sanctions, maybe more possible positive meetings. Let's not deal with that. And that, I think maybe that's also the case.
She is
more a non-professional in her sphere than Trump is, I think, in international relations. If you put her and Putin together, she's going to lose that debate.
Yeah. So
by the way, this is what Putin wants.
We apologize to our viewers. Because your audio was a little bit hollow, but what wasn't hollow was what you had to say We'll send you some new AirPods out there so we can have these conversations in the future, okay? Andre, it's a delight to talk to you. Enjoy this very refreshing, real conversation, and I appreciate you being there for us, okay?
Thank you, Rick, very much. All the best to you.
Thank you. That's our show. Remember, always be looking outside your own box. Truths, they don't live in boxes, by golly. I'm Rick Sanchez. We'll be looking for you next time.